Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Putting It Together. I think this is episode 172, and my guest today is Ewan Donald, one of my great pals of the theatre and one of the funniest guys I know. I think I might have said that a couple of weeks ago about Scott Mackey, but it's still true. We talk about spending time in a dressing room together trying to learn copious amounts of lines for understudy tracks that we never ended up performing. I like talking about understudy work. I don't know if you've noticed an emerging theme. I find it very interesting. And also Ewan and his partner Romana have a hugely popular podcast for Trying Out Loud, which is about their fertility journey. So as you can imagine, it's close to their heart, but also, you know, funny and touching and definitely something for, well, for anyone, but particularly for people who are going through that journey or who want to learn more about that stuff, about IVF and about trying to conceive and struggling with all that stuff. So Ewan told me a wee bit about that towards the end of the interview, but just a chat and a laugh, you know how it is. Ewan spent many, many years of his career at Dundee Rep, started out there in the graduate programme, and since has gone back many times, and that's where I first worked with him, and just, yeah, we just clicked. You know when humour just, when you have the same humour. So yeah, we're talking a wee bit about the idiosyncrasies of the way people talk and saying things out of context and getting words wrong and just all that stuff I love. So if you've not seen it yet, you might fancy now going over to my new Instagram page or my Twitter page, which are both called Brido Hingwy. Brido Hingwy, H-I-N-G-W-Y, and I'm doing some funny wee videos. And they're gaining a bit of traction, which has been fun. I think at first I gave myself a bit of a doing for that, so I was like, oh, the ego, you know. But then I realised I was getting a chance to create wee things, and I was showing those things to an audience, and I was getting the buzz out of that that I would always get from showing things to an audience and getting a bit of approval. And then I think there's nothing wrong with that. It's part of being human, and it's also part of our job and our industry, and it's been good. It's kind of like coming back to work in a very small way. So check them out. Brido Hingwy on Instagram and Twitter for all your funny video needs. Mostly videos about everybody's aunt and everybody's uncle, Frank and Janice. More characters coming soon. So I'm not going to stay with you long. I'm going away on holiday this week. I'm going up north and I'm going to turn the phone off and relax for a week. And also write a bit and read a bit and stuff like that. So I'll be back next week. There will be a new episode next week as ever. But in the meantime, I'm going to leave you to enjoy this interview with Ewan Donald and the rest of your day, and wish me luck and hope that the weather is clement up north for the next few days so I can enjoy it. And stay well and keep talking to me. Send me wee emails, brian@puttingittogethercast.com. Contact me through the Instagram and the Twitter. By all means, I love hearing from people. Those are PitCCPod on Instagram and Twitter. We're PitCCPod. So feel free to send messages, share, let people know you're listening to the show, all that stuff. And if you're using iTunes or Apple Podcasts, please go on there and give us a 5-star rating and even write a wee review. It makes a massive difference. It gets more people to see the podcast, see that it exists, and therefore listen to it. So it really does help, and it doesn't take a minute. Now, if you'd like to support the show, you can do that by going to the website, puttingittogethercast.com, and clicking on the yellow donate button, which takes you to PayPal. You can do it for as little as a couple of pounds a month, or you can make a larger donation on a one-off basis, however you want to do it. Remember, it's puttingittogethercast.com, click on the yellow donate button, and those donations are very much appreciated. Thank you to the people who are already doing that. It's plateaued a wee bit, and I'd like to build it up a wee bit. So if you value this show, if you listen to it a lot, if you think it's something that's worthwhile, then please do consider giving something to keep making it happen. Because it's an expensive and time consuming process, which I love doing for you. But I do want to make it part of my ongoing income. So your help would be so much appreciated in that. puttingittogethercast.com and click on donate. So now it's time for my guest of the week. It's Ewan Donald, and he's with me, and we are Putting It Together. Must be nice to be back with the old gang though, eh?
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely. Yeah, it's just nice to be in and working and having a laugh with them and doing some stuff. You know, it's been... I haven't actually worked for, well, since Christmas,
Yeah, when we worked together, yeah.
Yeah, when we worked together, not even, yeah. Nothing in January, February, and then March, it was like, boom. So I forgot what to do, probably.
Forgot how to be an actor.
Yeah. Never, never.
It never leaves you. It is strange to be getting, I mean, the weather's starting to get cold again.
Yeah, I like that though.
I love it, but it makes me want to be walking into a warm stage door and rehearsing the Christmas show. It just gives me that feeling.
No, I think I know why you like it, because you like get to wear your array of scarves, don't you?
Well, that is part of it, yeah. I like the overcoat.
Here he is,
like
with his scarf.
Here he is. What scarf's it going to be today? Not interested in the show in the slightest. I don't even want to be an actor. I just like scarves.
That's it, yeah. Scarves. You've got a few hats as well, haven't you?
Few hats, yeah. Richard Conlon always makes fun of me. How many scarves have you brought? I was through for a week there doing the covering the Sheddenborough Fringe Festival, and he was like, "Many scarves have you got?" I said, "I've got none. It's summer. I've only ever stayed there in the winter, so he's used to the array of scarves."
I like getting out the autumn winter jackets, you know, so I can just look cool as fuck, you know.
Try be the operative word. But then I feel like the last time I was really going anywhere, was the weather was like this again, so it's like, it just reminds me that it's been almost a year that this has kind of been going on, do you know?
Yeah.
That I find quite depressing.
Well, it was pretty dark when the lockdown happened, wasn't it? And now it's dark again.
Right, and we went through the whole summer and now we're back round.
We're still doing this shit.
Oh, God.
But, you know what, I'm thankful for the work, and I'm thankful to be, you know, so thankful for the work, because look how many people are losing their jobs left, right and centre.
Oh, it's terrible, I know. Particularly in our industry.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are actually going to come back from this? We don't know.
Totally decimated. So I feel, pretty lucky.
But you've had a good run with the rep over the last few years, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I kind of started with them way back 2004. I did the graduate scheme there.
It's 2004, right?
Yeah,
okay.
2004. And then.
You were a young buck.
A young buck, yep. I was with them for a year, and then I came back on and off over the years. I think the last time I was there was like a Sunshine and Leith, a tour, 2008, 2009, and then didn't really go back until 2016. And I kind of joined the company, and I've still been able to do some freelance stuff, which has been nice.
Mm-hmm.
I've had this kind of long-term relationship with them. They can't get rid of me, really.
But that's what happens when you keep showing up and being reliable and being good at your job. Ugh, give me a break.
I know, well, reliable anyway. I know.
You definitely show up.
I definitely am early all the time.
One thing you can say, what you like about his acting, but he always turns up.
He's always early there.
He's always there.
He's like, come on, let's get going. That's it.
He seems to be trying to learn his lines as well. He seems to put in it, like his script is quite dog-eared. He's pacing up and down, so I feel like he must be working.
See, the problem is everything takes much longer with me, you know. People like go, yeah, I'm off book now, and I'm like, shit, and I've got to go home and sit for hours. I have to really, really try, like, and get good at this job. For some people it comes really natural, but I'm like, right, I've got to go away and fucking submerge myself in it, you know.
But that's only one aspect of it, and it just so happens that some people are good at that aspect of it, the learning lines. I mean, that is just a sort of an ancillary skill that or a muscle that we kind of develop. Some people just tend to be really good at it, and for some people, as you say, they just have to really put their nose to the grindstone and work at it.
I think so, but I also think it's I don't know, I thought I'd get better at it, this line learning thing, but I definitely think I'm getting a little bit worse at it.
Did you get older?
Yeah, I don't know, that sounds like such a cliche, but I think it's, I don't know.
Old people always, like older actors always say that, I used to be able to learn lines, you know.
Maybe just, I can't be arsed, maybe that's what it is, eh?
Less and less.
Aye, it's like, a big speech, you know, when you're younger and you're like, great, I have like loads of lines, and you're like, no. Look at that massive speech.
I like it. I get a buzz out of it. I think it's like part of the job that's really binary. Like, you either know it or you don't. So it's like, it's a box you can tick.
Yeah.
The other stuff is so subjective that it can be, it's much more subtle. But it's like, you know, like you can just go, right, I've learned that. So that's a task done. It's like doing the dishes or something.
Yeah. And I'm not averse to learning stuff before I start. As well, I mean, I know people are like, I can't learn it until then, but you're like, well, you're an actor, you can change it. You can, as long as you know it, you can change what you're doing. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's just that that fear of not knowing your lines on stage. It's a recurring sort of nightmare.
And, oh God,
and
absolutely.
I think to try and prevent that, just, you know, do as much as you can to get those lines down as soon as possible, you know.
Do you remember us in the dressing room at the Lyceum learning all the lines for the understudy parts as well, though? Going through every bit of the show. Because you were understudying Scrooge, so you had not only your whole track, but also the main track to learn as well.
Yeah, I remember just getting up in the morning before coming in, cycling into work, and it was just, I'll spend an hour learning it. Because in the morning, it seems like it's the best time to learn, you know. And then coming in with you and doing it, and it was just endless, wasn't it?
Yeah, because right up to maybe the last about 2 weeks before we closed, we were still like, should we run these lines?
Yeah.
Because you never know. I mean, it could still happen, obviously.
Well, I like the fact you were just as obsessive as me about sort of, do you want to run the lines? Do you want to run the lines?
Yeah, that meant it worked quite well that we were in the same dressing room.
But isn't it funny that it was like, even that sort of countdown to the end of, you know, the last few shows, there was still that sort of like, I was checking in, seeing, is Crawford, is he okay? Is he all right?
There's still that possibility that it might still
and
happen.
And just for the fact that we did that, we did a, you know, understudy rehearsal, I was like, the audience would be getting so shortchanged getting me, because, like, I'm obviously not Scrooge age, do you know what I mean? I'm in my 40s, but it's like, I've just not got that gravitas to pull that off, and it's like, oh, please don't go off, Crawford, this would just be, and people are paying, like, no. 30 quid to come and see this guy, you know? Like,
I was quite happy to not go on, but to have the experience of learning it all, and like, I felt like it was a good experience, but I was happy with the outcome that I never had to go on.
Yeah,
that was fine.
But you had multiple tracks to learn, which
four other ones. Yeah,
that, I mean, at least I only had Scrooge, and it was like, that's my track, that's it. You had like all these weird connotations of it, and I was like, oh God.
It was like, there were a couple of scenes where I could have been any one of four different people in the scene, so I had four different colours of highlighter. And I'm like, can we run it four times, please? I'll be this guy, then this guy.
Hey, imagine trying to do that when you're hungover.
Oh my God. See, this is why best not to be. Somehow I did it for years. I mean, I didn't do all that.
But,
understudying, but you know.
Yeah, but that, like, you did it when you were younger. Like, and I don't know, doing that when you're. I couldn't even imagine that. Probably did the same as well. And I was like, yeah. But as you get a bit older, the fear factor kicks in a bit more, and you're like, oh God.
Oh, I think it's much harder work. But I think there's something about being hungover where I used to get to the end of the day and I felt like I'd worked so hard just to get through it, that then I felt I was deserving of a reward. Aye. So there was a sense of achievement, and then I would go, right, I'll have a pint now.
Oh, no, totally.
So it sort of feeds the whole cycle for me.
Well, yeah, and I think it's you just enjoy the work more and appreciate those mornings more if you have to get up and go, this is good, I'm not hungover, this is great.
It's so nice to be there and be fresh and be like, right, I've eaten something, I've showered, I've had time to get here, and I'm like ready for the work, as opposed to just like on the edge and living on the nerves.
Are you going, oh God, that, what am I going to have? I'll have a wee bacon roll.
Just at the last minute, still eating it during the warm-up and all that.
No, not fun at all.
No, it's not. But I think when you're young, you think, I'm getting away with it. And there is a buzz to it.
Yeah.
You know, in the early days.
I mean, there was that quote from, I think it was Peter O'Toole. He says, you know, what's the best thing about being an actor? And it was like, oh, the drink at the bar afterwards, you know.
That's so sad.
I know, but that is, there's a bit of kind of that culture that I think when you start being an actor, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of drinking, a lot of socialising, and there's a bit of that still, I think, still going on, you know.
No. There is, but thankfully not.
Not as
during
much.
The day so much.
No,
I think not too long ago that was still happening over lunch and even maybe in the room.
Oh yeah,
you know, within the last say 20 years, but it's certainly not a thing anymore.
No, thank God.
Even the smoking. Can you imagine that, drinking and smoking in the rehearsal room? I wouldn't last 2 minutes.
Well, when I started,
I'd be fired in the week.
Yeah, when I started Dundee Rep, it was before the smoking ban came in. So I remember our first show we did. I was sharing a dressing room with Robert Patterson, and rest in peace, Robert. He's gone now. And he was smoking in the, and I was kind of a bit of a smoker, but I was like, I don't really. He was smoking in the dressing room.
Dressing room.
Yeah, in the tiny wee dressing room. I was like, so I kind of threw a strop, and I was like, Well, I'm not going to be in here with you.
The new actor, yeah, love it.
And I just was like, nah, I want to get swapped, because it was too much, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, this is brutal. And then the smoking ban came in and it was like, thank God for that, you know?
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about that the other day, how, especially in Glasgow, everybody was like, it'll never work, you'll never stop people smoking. And then the next day it was like,
piece of piss.
They had come up with the great idea of put the onus of responsibility on the landlords. Aye. Instantly stopped, because the landlords are not going to have it. Like, they're not going to get fined. They're not having it.
Nah.
So it just went one day, bang, gone.
Yeah. And now you just get a kind of stale, sweaty smell, which is...
Sweats and farts.
That's fine with me.
So let's all go out for a nice drink, shall we?
I know, God.
It was weird in the beginning, like, you could suddenly not only smell everything, but you could see everything.
Yeah.
And I think it definitely took away some of the kind of allure or romance of being in some of those dingier places.
Yeah, when you're
just like, I can see into that corner now and I don't like it.
Because I used to work in pubs as well, and it was just...
Did you?
Like... You came away and the clothes were stinking, and you were like, oof. Oh man, it's brutal. So it's,
yeah, I remember you used to wake up after nights out and like everything you wore, every jacket and everything was all like, all had to go in the wash.
Yeah.
Stinking.
Yeah, brutal.
Where did you work in pubs? Like in Edinburgh?
No, back home in Falkirk.
Falkirk, yeah. You're from, I forget that. Yeah.
I worked in a bar in this, I was going to say the city centre, it's not a city, it's a town. I worked in a bar there called the New Market, which was great. It was like a kind of happening sort of bar and had music and stuff. And then I worked in a few bars. It's quite enjoyed being a
I can't imagine you working in a bar somehow.
Really?
I don't know why.
You don't think I've got the mentality? Like, is that what you're saying?
No, if I picture it carefully now, I can imagine you with a tea towel over your shoulder.
Hey, did you think this is an episode of Cheers or something?
Sam. Giving sort of advice and counsel to some old man.
That's what you do, though. That is the job as well. I mean, you take
it's
shit
pastoral,
from...
It's isn't it?
Yeah, you take shit from people and you sort of... there's some poor souls out there that come into bars and they're just like, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I couldn't do that now. I just not got the patience now. I'd just be fighting with people every 2 minutes, I think.
I could definitely not do that.
Some guy goes, oi, I said no ice. And I'm just like, oof, fuck you.
Fuck off. Get out. You're bored.
I know, but it is a good sort of learning experience, and you know, got a bit of money and but oh my God, it's a hard job.
It's full on, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So what were you like growing up? You grew up in Falkirk, were you into youth theatre and all that?
No, not really at all. At school we did a musical every year, but there was a youth theatre that I went to for a year when I was a kid. Then my mum thought it'd be a good idea for me to go, but I had to sack off football training for like a year, and I was just like not pleased about that at all because I was into football, you know. And then I quite enjoyed it, you know. It was like, I can't even remember the show we did, but I was like a sort of ensemble, you know. Little pipsqueak up the back, like singing and dancing.
Yeah.
Do you know? But I never thought, oh God, one day I'll be down the front as a leading man. Like, I was just like, I can't wait for this to be over, you know? And then.
you weren't having it at all.
No, not at all. I quite enjoyed the I quite enjoyed something of it. I quite enjoyed the sort of camera, like the crack and stuff. I mean, it was quite young. It was quite good fun, you know? And there's nothing beats the actual live performance when you're like, wow, that was pretty amazing. There's people clapping. I think that's quite a drug, you know.
Oh yeah.
So I didn't do anything. I was more interested in being in a band. So I learned to play guitar and I got myself in some really dodgy bands instead.
Right, okay.
With some horrendous names.
Go on then. Go on.
Well, we played at this club called the Happening Club.
It was called
the Happening Club. Yeah, it was right in the town centre. Yeah, like, but we had to get like, we were kind of like, I guess you're talking that was like 94, 95, something like that. And we're like, right, we're going to call ourselves. And it was a kind of quite grungy, a bit of kind of not quite sort of, well, Britpop thing hadn't really started yet. So it was like a lot of like Buzzcocks, Clash, Sex Pistols kind of feel to it, you know. And we called ourselves Stillborn Suicide.
Oh God!
I know, it was horrendous.
Oh, that's horrible.
I know, it really is. But that was that teenage angst thing, you know.
Try to be provocative, yeah.
And then, about maybe a year later, I kind of formed another band that was a bit more mellow called Willow.
Oh, God.
Willow! I mean,
that might be worse.
I know it is. It's like, fuck it, that's horrendous as well. And then
they're never good. Nah. Band names when you're a teenager are so seldom good.
I was mad into the Doors as well. So I called ourselves at one another band that was called they were called the Soft Parade, because that was the name of a Doors album. But
that does happen, doesn't it? You've got like Arab Strap after Bill and Sebastian. You know, it does happen.
Oh yeah, Arab Strap were from Falkirk. I went to school with Aidan Moffat actually.
Ah, did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I mean he was a few years ahead of me, but yeah, I know the band thing was the most important thing, really, aside from, and then, you know, I was all right, it was okay, I didn't really sort of, we played some gigs and, you know, I quite enjoyed it, but, you know, it's hard to stay in a band, I think, especially when you're at school and you're like, everyone thinks they're fucking Kurt Cobain or Liam Gallagher. You know?
I know, because, I mean, you really believe it, I think, at the time, don't you?
Yeah.
You think we're gonna get gigs and we're gonna rise, and someone will notice us, and that'll be it.
Yeah, and but you forget you have to get good first.
You've got to actually do some work.
You've got,
because we were like, I know the chords to "Don't Look Back in Anger," so, and there's an upright piano in the music room, so that was basically my criteria for starting a band.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the thing. It's
we held auditions actually. I remember. There was me and my mate Scott, and it was basically just a battle for who got to play the drums, because we all wanted to play drums all the time, and I was relegated to piano because I knew the chords. And I remember us holding auditions in a lunchtime, we were like, and just the worst people turned up, just you know, not like the kind of auditions you'd want where people were like dying to be in the band and you felt powerful. It was like, open the door and go, okay, that's the auditions, oh, it's you. It was just some guy who was quite new to the school, and because he had a guitar, that was his qualification for being in the band.
That's anything goes, isn't it? It's,
absolutely.
It's pretty hardcore, but it's, you know, I think it's a kind of, you have to go through that. You have to just get stuck in, you know, and...
Oh, rite of passage,
yeah,
for sure.
Definitely.
So where did the acting come in then? It must have been quite late on.
I guess after leaving school, I was like, what am I going to do myself, really? You know, I sort of done all right at school. I didn't excel at all, and I was sort of...
And you had no thought before that about what someone asked you, what you're going to do?
I wanted to play football, you know, and I was into golf and stuff like that, and I thought, but I was all right at them, but I was like, nobody was chapping on my door going, come on. So I was like, right, I've got to get my finger out here. And I ended up doing I ended up doing odd jobs and working in hotels and doing bar work. Then I went back to college and to do my higher English, to get credits to make up my higher English, and there was a access to drama course, and I thought, yeah, I'd be into that, you know, I'd be quite interested. I was interested in like movies and stuff, and I thought I'd love to sort of give that another go, you know, and I was a bit more focused. I didn't have the sort of school surrounding, so I thought, you know, I'm going to give this a go, and I went and did that, and you know, it was a terrible course. You know, I did sort of the English bit. I mean, it was great. Like, looking back on it now, I had nothing to compare it to, but it was, I loved it. Even though looking back now, you go, God, it was pretty piss poor, but actually I loved doing it at the time. I thought, I quite like this is good.
But you don't know at the time, that as you say, you have a great old crack, and then when you look back, when you get some experience, you go, my God, that must have been the worst thing.
Yeah,
objectively speaking.
Oh, I mean, because basically, and also it was just like full of just so like randoms, really just random folk. Like, I think it started off like we were about 20, and there was about 5 of us at the end, you know.
Oh yeah, the dropout rate is huge. Was that an FE college sort of situation?
Yeah, it was at Falkirk Technological College, and I had to do this to make up as part of my higher English kind of thing. It was like an NC, you know.
So that was a credit towards the English, the drama.
Yeah, a part of it was, the course was Communications 4.
Oh,
because
I
wanted to get a better, I didn't know why I wanted to get a better mark in English. I just thought it was something I quite enjoyed doing, so I thought, I'll have a go at that.
I actually taught on a course like that for a very short time, because it didn't suit me, but it was a musical theatre one, and the class was, I may have told this story in the podcast before, but I've lost track now, it's been so long. The class was musical theatre repertoire, and honestly, like, the first day I went there, I thought, this is going to be huge. I had a whole Dead Poets Society vision in my head, you know, that were going to be up on the tables and pure inspired and all that. And I went in, I mean, I might as well have had elbow patches on my jacket. I went in and we sat in a circle and I said, okay, let's begin with this question. Why musical theatre? And I wanted to inflame passions. I wanted them to tell me what it was they loved about musical theatre. And I looked at one girl and I said, Laura, whatever her name was, why musical theatre? And she said, well, they ran out of places on hairdressing and Sarah Jane said I should come here. And I was like, that's kind of not what I meant. But okay, right, let's warm up.
That's brilliant. That's pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the sort of like, you pop your head and go, can I get in this? It literally was that. People were like, can I come in here? And they're like, yeah. And you come.
Yeah, might as well.
And but I was, that was my sort of, I was into the books. I was into Stanislavski. I just read all the books, Uta Hagen, everything. I was just like digesting all these, you know. I was like, I want to be a serious actor. I want to, you know, I want to take this seriously. And everyone else was just fucking around. But I was like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty serious about it. And I was like, no. And it's probably looked like such a prat, you know. But there was something about it that I loved, that I still love about it.
You got the bug at that point, that early point.
I think there's a sort of something quite magic about it. Like, and it just, I like the sort of the study of it and the homework of it, you know, and the, like, getting into the sort of the theory of it as well. I enjoy the theory of it. So, looking back, I'm glad I did it.
So what did it then lead to? Did you know quite early on and think, well, I'm going to need to take this further?
Yeah, I went to, well, I ended up doing an HNC in Edinburgh, which was a great course run by a woman, Tess, and a guy called Glenn, who ended up working for professionally. Much later, they started this company called Forum Interactive, who Simon and Harry and loads of people have worked for them. So they did this course, which was great, which was a far more sort of intensive and far more focused and disciplined. And yeah, and I did that for a year, then tried to get into drama school, and I thought it'd be really easy to get into drama school. And I was like, oh shit, no.
Yeah, don't we all?
Yeah, you kind of go, oh yeah, I'll just do drama school next. And
yeah, that'd be next.
Yeah, but it was like, knock back. So I'd done some traveling after that. I was like, I'm going to traveling, right. Yeah. It's like going, because they face things like, go and get some life experience, and you're like, what is, so do you want me to go to jail or something like that? Yeah.
For some people that might be the reality.
I know. So yeah, and then did some traveling and all that, and then I went, eventually got into drama school. Yeah, but it wasn't like, I was like, you know, if I don't get in, I'm going to try and find some other route in. So drama school wasn't the sort of be all and end all. I wasn't like going to be devastated. I was just like, you know, let's see what happens here.
So what did you do? 1 year you went for a whole round of auditions at different places, and then you were told go away and get the life experience.
Yeah, but it's quite baffling because I wasn't like young. I was like, what would I be? I would have been like 21. I was like, fucking, like, how much life? You know, I'm 21. You know, I must have come across as, I don't know, you know, with these. I think they just say that.
It's a turn of phrase, exactly, isn't it? It's like, go away and get better or be better next time.
I think it was just, I picked the wrong pieces. You know what, you know, you end up picking like Shylock and Merchant of Venice, and you're like, you know, stuff like that. You're like, just picking the wrong pieces for, you know, I still hadn't really worked that out, you know, pieces that suited me, and, you know, and you don't know much about them. You go in sort of a little bit cat-handed, even though I was quite well prepared. I just wasn't aligned with sort of the best material. You know, it was like, you know, Shakespeare and a few modern plays, but yeah, it was like going to the library, but you can access things so easily now, you know.
But you could be, as you say, well prepared, but prepared in the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you could learn, you know, a whole book full of poetry, but it wouldn't be right. And to go in with the likes of Shylock, I suppose at a young age you think, I'll show them, right? They've never seen this before. And they must just go, oh my God.
Hath not a Jew eyes? Hath not, it's like going, And you're like, so.
Launching right in, really earnest.
Yeah, really earnest. If you prick me, shall I not bleed? And then you're going, what? And then you're doing the accent and everything. You're like, and then the guy's like, can we just stop? And you're like, what? I'm doing my best thing. I'm doing my.
Yeah. You know. And what are you going to sing?
Yeah. And then.
Well, from Les Mis, Stars.
Well, that's it. They burst the bubble and then they're like, right, yeah. So do you know how old Shylock is? Do you know what this is about, this play? And you just, but every little step you're like learning something new, you're like, shit, I've got to be more prepared because it's really competitive, this, even getting into drama school, you know?
And when you got there, did you have that same kind of buzz that you did when you were at college and getting stuck in? Or did you find, were you like a fish out of water? What was it like?
No, I was probably way too serious when I
you
started.
Were the serious guy?
Yeah, I was a serious guy, and, you know, people in my year take the piss at me. I lightened up probably in second year and I just started sort of partying more and having a laugh. And but I was like,
that'll do it.
I was just far too serious. It was ridiculous. But I loved drama school. I met some great people and I think it was a great experience. I think it could have been condensed into like a year and a half, to be honest. You know what I mean? I think,
really?
Yeah, it's just, again, looking back going, really, that's a long time to be like studying acting, do you know what I mean? And I just think they kind of like pulled out loads when it didn't need to be, you know. But, you know, that's just my opinion. But I think it was, yeah, it was a great experience. I had lots of fun, and I wouldn't you know, change anything, really.
And you came straight out and went into the graduate scheme, which is a great start.
Yeah, I came out and, but funnily enough, I came out and I realised that, God, this is like another level of learning now, you know?
Yeah, like, it's like, that's the beginning almost.
Yeah, because you're like, you go to drama school and you learn the basics and stuff and you think you're brilliant and you go, oh, this is great.
Well, you get all the good parts as well.
I was playing Oedipus and, you know. And
not a chance.
Yeah, and you're like going, you come out and you're like, and especially going to Dundee Rep, when everybody knew each other and you're just all of a sudden plunged into this world where everyone's really good and you're, I was like second guessing myself and, you know, you're the kind of top dog at drama school and you're getting all the good parts and then you come out here and you're like, I had a proper lack of confidence, you know, I just was questioning myself and, it kind of held me back. It took me a while to get past that, and then I got absolutely mauled in my first professional review. Eh?
That's right. I remember you telling me about this. Tell us a bit more about it.
I know you can see I'm not bitter.
No. I'll let that go.
Obviously, fuckers. But no, we're doing Macbeth, and we had. And I was like, it was Dominic was there. Him and James Briney had given me the job. They thought, you know, I was good enough to be part of the graduate scheme. And I was like, yeah, it's great. And we did it. And Dominic's great, brilliant director. And I thought I was done all right. And they kind of universally tore me to shreds, which I thought was really unnecessary. And I didn't think it warranted that. But I don't know what was going on there. So I've kind of hated them ever since, to be honest.
What, all reviewers or those particular?
No, I guess not. That's a bit harsh. Hated them. I've just kind of, I guess in a way for me it was a good thing to be slated straight away because the only way was up from there, you know. And I really didn't. I kind of just started to grow a thick skin after that, I think.
Yeah. Did you stop reading them then?
Yes and no. I would kind of go. I'd go through phases and. I'll go, I'll just have a wee look afterwards. I would never read any during a production. I would wait until afterwards when I couldn't do anything because I didn't want them to influence what I was doing, you know?
Well, this is it. When you're in something and if you read the review and then you see someone's performance change, you're like, I think you read the review too. It's hard not to, though, I think, if you're heavily criticised.
Yeah.
If you read it. You
and
know?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, it's like you said, it's one person's opinion, but I managed to take it and use it as ammunition and go, do you know what? I'm going to try and use this and use it as a springboard to just not give a fuck what they think. Or not doing it for them, do you know what I mean? And not worrying about them and stuff like that. And it was probably the best thing that happened to me, to be honest. Everyone likes to get a nice thing said about them, but I've...
Okay.
You know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't like that, but I think that definitely sort of forged an opinion in my head that was like, I'm not going to... Because some people are like, oh, the reviews didn't hold so much weight.
Well, if you believe the good ones, you have to believe the bad ones.
I know.
That's the old saying, isn't it? Yeah. And it works.
No, totally.
Because if you get that good one, you go, wow, I matter now. And then the other one says the opposite, and you go, oh, no, I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean...
It doesn't work. You know?
Nah, and people just have their favourites. And people, critics have their favourites, and ones they like and ones they don't like and stuff like that. And you're like, do you know what? That's fine. Because it's a subjective thing. And if they don't really like me, it's not going to stop me working, you know what I mean? I'm just going to have to try and ignore that.
So was there a time in Dundee, you know, during that graduate scheme or later when you started to feel like you found your feet and you were kind of on equal footing with the veterans that were there?
Yeah, good question. I would say it didn't really happen till the very last show. I think I really actually struggled. I did, let's see, 1, 2, 3, I did 4 shows all in all. And I think it wasn't until the last one when I was playing... I was the graduate.
With Irene?
Yeah. And I played Benjamin Braddock, the part made famous by Dustin Hoffman. And played that, and Dominic directed it. And I'd kind of just, I got to a stage when I felt much more confident. And it was just a great experience. And that was a great springboard for me to leave there and go into the sort of freelance world. But I think by that time I'd grown up a little bit as well, and I'd felt like I was okay. I was all right. I could handle this, you know. Yeah. I wasn't sick.
It's a big year, isn't it?
Yeah.
For anyone.
No, it is. It is, definitely. And it's such an amazing experience because you're just learning from these actors that have been up there and been doing it for years. And, you know, and then I always make sure, like, because I am now one of those actors that up there, that you know, 16 years later doing it, so when the graduates come through, it's trying to make sure that they're looked after and they're doing okay, because it can be a really kind of lonely experience as well if you're not feeling great. And so I think it's just that sort of, you just got to make sure, put your arm around them and go, you're all right, because
it's all right, mate. You're going to be okay.
That's
a big part of our job, I think, is remembering what it was like when we first did it and how scary it is, and go and try and help someone not feel quite so quite so harsh.
But sadly, you see people behaving the other way sometimes when they're
helping with it.
Yeah, which is because that can really tear someone down. That just try and be a decent person, I guess.
That's a good rule of thumb anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so, you know.
So what did the world look like when you came out after that year? I mean, was it a harsher place than it was inside the walls of Dundee Rep?
Not really. It was good. I was kind of like, right, what next? What am I going to do next? And, you know, there was the spells of unemployment. It wasn't like back-to-back work. Went and done some tours. Then, just worked over the years as an actor and tried to sort of learn this trade, this craft, I guess, and just tried to earn a living. You know, you're kind of bottom line, you're trying to just be an actor, earn a living and pay your rent and do some decent work.
I know,
work.
It's like when people ask you what do you want to do or what next, you're just like, if I could keep working, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I never had any like grand plans. I was trying to sort of establish myself, you know, I guess in Scotland, trying to work and hope that, you know, because you know what it's like. It's like you try and be a good person, and because I think when it comes to a lot of directors I've spoke to over the years, you know, the last thing they want is some dick in the room with them. You know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? It's like going. I heard them say, you know, I'd rather work with someone that was nice but was less talented. And that's maybe me.
I don't think it is at all, but I take your point. I think, like, there's so much weight in being a good company member and showing up and being reliable and not being a dick.
Yeah.
Before anything else, you know.
Absolutely, and just having a laugh, you know, it's like.
Oh yeah, enjoying it. Yeah.
I've just had so much fun over the years with people in shows and yourself included. You're just like, do you know what? Let's do the work, but let's have fun as well, because.
Oh, it can be the funnest thing to do ever.
Yeah.
Some of the kind of laughs. And I also found that a lot of the stuff I find funny, I can only really apply, I can only really share it with actors or comedians in terms of who will find it funny, because the kind of, I don't know, the strange little twists of wordplay or a little look is the kind of thing that actors find funny, but when you try and explain it to your family, they're just like, yeah.
Oh no, completely. It's you kind of look for that. I look for that, and I look for
those strange things.
Yeah, and you look for the ones that are, you're gonna have a laugh. You know, take the job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously, and just try and have fun with it. I think
when I was teaching at Coatbridge College, like when I was telling you before, I had to cover a class once, and they were doing like character work, right? They had each invented a character. And they were kind of over time developing all the different facets of this person. Then we're putting them in different situations and trying them out and stuff. So this one day I had to cover, and there were about three or four people in the class. I mean, it was probably like a register of 25, like you said. But this is an example of something that really cracked me up, that very few people find funny. So I'm going to test it on you, right? This could fall flat on its face. So the scenario was, we have to find a place where all these disparate characters could likely meet in the real world so that we can test them out and put them against each other, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got this woman who designs, I think it was she designed beds or she designed bedrooms for celebrities, high-end kind of clients. So that was her character, based on someone real that she knew or something. So this girl had to play this bed designer. And then there was a guy who was an internationally famous conductor. And then there was another lad who worked in the kitchen at a pub down the road. And these were the characters, right? So we said, right, okay, what scenario can we have? So we had the bed designer lady have a warehouse, and she was having a warehouse sale. So she was opening the warehouse quite literally, and then if people might come to it, there were signs outside, or people who are walking by might just pop in. Mm-hmm. And she had put out drinks and snacks on like a trestle table. This is all in her imagination, of course. Anyway, the conductor appears and he's just off the train and she says, hello, what are you doing? He says, I'm a conductor. He was French. I mean, it was ludicrous. Anyway, she offers him a drink. She says, do you want to come and look at the beds and maybe you'll be interested in commissioning a design? Well, the lad who worked in the kitchen at the pub had walked by on his break and he was like having a smoke outside, and he wanders into this bed sale thing and he sits down and the woman goes, hi, welcome, I've got a special sale on, where are you from? And he said, I work down the road, I work in Wetherspoons in the kitchen. And she said, oh, well, thank you for coming, I've got drinks and snacks there, can I get you a drink? And he goes, just a pint of Tennent's, cheers. And I absolutely lost it, because like, why would she have, like, she wouldn't have that. And it just cracked me up that in his head, that was a normal thing to ask for. Where like there was drinks on a trestle table. I don't know. Look, Over the years I've tried to explain that to so many people, and it just still kills me that he would ask for a pint of Tennent's.
Oh man, just remember, anywhere my dad goes, he looks for a bookies. It doesn't matter if he's like on holiday in like Spain or something. He's like, where's a bookies?
Right.
Where's a bookies? You know that?
And does he go into it?
Yeah, it's so funny, and it's quite random connection there, but it just reminded me of like my mum being irate with him, saying everywhere he goes he's like he's for a book. It doesn't matter where he is in the world, you know, and he's looking.
It's just, I think it's context, it's like lack of context that makes me laugh. Like, why would anyone have, she wouldn't even have a pint glass, never mind a specific brand of lager. Just made me laugh so much. But yeah, anything that's kind of a bit odd, people that say odd things, that always makes me laugh.
Like, where's the Ladbrokes here? And it's like, there's no Ladbrokes in Chicago, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly. As you put it in a different country, they would never even know what that is, you know?
Oh, and he's got everyone like running after him going, hey, this gentleman's looking for Ladbrokes. We're not quite sure what that is.
Is that a shoe shop?
Is that, can somebody look the internet? And he's like, aye, you know, Ladbrokes, hen. You know what I mean?
I was in, where was I? Southport, which is like the Blackpool of, slightly further south than Blackpool. And I was with my pal who's from Belfast. And she said, well, someone was not feeling well. And she said, we'll have to find a bell dock. And I was like, we'll have to find a what? And I thought she was saying a word that I didn't understand. She went, we need to get a bell dock because it's Saturday, so everything's closed. And I went, a bell dock? And it turned out that what she was talking about was like the service in Belfast is Belfast Doctors. The out of hours is called Bell Dock. But she's in Southport going, excuse me, where's the bell dock? And it's like, no, that's not that's not what it's called.
Oh, that is brilliant. Well, my dad, you know Witherspoons, my dad calls it, for some bizarre reason I've never got to it, he calls it Yardbirds. No idea.
You told me this. Yeah. And you never figured out why.
Yeah, and he's like, Yardbirds, you know, and he's like, it's not called that. So when he's in maybe the UK, actually,
right.
He's maybe down in the UK, he's like, hey son, where's the Yardbirds? And they're like, I don't know.
But wait a minute. Is that like, is he mixed up or did it used to be called that?
That is brilliant. I think I asked him and he can't even remember why he does that. It's like when Trigger calls Rodney and only feels now calls him Dave and he's like, why do you call him Dave and not Rodney? You know, it's strange. I don't know.
You can never quite get to the bottom of it. You just sort of accept it.
You just go, and he's like, but it's okay when he uses it with us because we understand that what he means, but when he's talking to a stranger,
you can't be wondering about.
He's like, excuse me, son.
Town.
Is a Yardbirds near here? We can get a drink. He's like, nah, don't know what that is.
I got talking to a guy in a Lidl once. I don't know how this all came about, but I remember him telling me about a place that I could go. He was recommending a place to me, and he went, "Aye, it's in Clyde Bank. It's just off George Bowie Road." And There's a road in Clydebank called Kilbowie Road, right? Yeah. But he's called it George Bowie Road, as in Clyde One Breakfast Show host George Bowie. But he said it fast, like George Bowie, and he thought that's what the road was called.
Oh man, I love just, shit like that.
It's brilliant.
No, that's good. I love when people just do random shit like that. It's those kind of dad's good for the old malapropisms as well. He's like,
yeah.
You know, can you be a wee bit more pacific? You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Just like random little...
All those little things.
Brilliant.
Those are the things that it's... You can write them, but it's just great when you hear real people say stuff like that. I just write them down.
My dad did this thing when he phones me. He always does it when he phones me up. And he's like... He knows that I'm in the flat in Edinburgh. And he's like... Phones me up and he's like, "Hi, Dad." He's like, "Where are you?" And I'm like... Where am I? Like, he always asks me where I am, and it's like I can either be in, like, especially during lockdown, I'm only going to be pretty much in one place, you know. And he's like, yeah. "Where are you?" But I always get a fright because I always think he's about to tell me some bad news, you know. He's like, "Where are you?
Are
you sitting down? Like, something happened to your mum?" It's like, going, "What?" I was like, "Stop doing that. It's ridiculous, you know. Why are you asking me where I am? Where why do you ask me that?" He's like, "Oh, I just want to know where you are." It's like, I'll either be in Edinburgh or in Dundee, one of the two.
Those are where your life takes place,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, what's the problem then? It's like, well, it's just one of these like nonsensical conversations, you know. But I do love him.
Oh, I met him once, I think. Not I think, I mean, I remember meeting him.
Yeah, he's classic.
In Dundee, yeah. Nice fella.
Oh, he's brilliant. He comes out with some absolute stonkers. He just cracks me up.
Yeah, I've just started, it's stuff that my mum says and her friends say, I've just started noting them and I'm making these Twitter videos and it just, don't need to do any writing, it's all there.
Oh, was that, I saw one of them that Takai sent me, I think, it was about, all right, Gene, aye, that's me away up the road now and all that, was it that one, yeah?
Yeah, just over and over again, like, I know, all that. Just nothing really, but it went kind of viral, it's been great.
Oh, that's brilliant, because I love those ones, it's like the, laughing with, Ali McRae about that, you know, it's like I think it was like a couple of Swedish students hearing a couple of Scottish women talking in the street and they were like quite confused about what they were talking about because they were like, it went like, "Hi Jean, is that you? Aye, that's me, that's been me since yesterday." And they're like, some kind of existential crisis going on here, you know.
It's so strange, is that me? This is me since last Tuesday.
That's been me since last Tuesday, that's me away up the road now. No, you're still here.
I'll let you go. I'll let you go because it definitely means I need to go.
I know. I'll let you go. I'm sure I'll say that. Yeah, I'll let you go. I'll let you get on. But I love.
Busy.
Is that you? Aye, that's me. That's us.
Aye, or this is it.
This is it.
This is it. No, you're right enough. This is it. This is the thing.
As I was
saying.
As I was saying.
As I says to him, you know, my mum does, she says, I says, it gets, it punctuates the sentence. So she goes, I says to him, I says, listen here, I says. I says, don't you dare. I says, don't you dare to me say that. I says, goes right. Definitely clear that you said it, okay.
It's great. That's brilliant. It's great.
These little, you know, turns of phrase that are so specific to hear, I think.
Fantastic.
Well, listen, you, I mean, we could talk all night, couldn't we? But
we could.
That's it.
We're just at,
this is it.
We're just actually talking.
Yeah.
Because it's far more interesting than the acting. No, acting's quite interesting, isn't it? Sometimes.
I like a bit of both in each episode. A bit of work chat, a bit of nonsense.
Yeah, definitely.
It's all good stuff.
No, it's good.
So, tell me about, before you go, I want to know a bit more about how your podcast is going.
Oh, yeah. It's going good. I mean, I'm saying that it's going good. We don't want it to be going anymore because of the nature of it. So, Romana and I, we do a podcast called For Trying Out Loud, and it's about our quest to have a wee baby. So Romana and I share our sort of tips and on how, well, basically, we kind of go through our story, which we're now 40 episodes in, so this has been going for a while, our infertility. But we talk to professionals, we talk to Chinese medicine fertility specialists, nutritionists, acupuncturists, and I speak to people getting the male perspective, because that was the big thing. Romana came to me a couple of years ago now, a year and a half, a couple of years ago, and she was keen on doing a podcast. But I wasn't keen on doing it because I guess I thought it was a bit too personal, a bit too intimate. And then the more I thought about it, she was like, no, we can sort of connect with other people and we can, you know, share our story with other people, and we can work through some stuff as well, because it's just such a devastating and heartbreaking thing to go through. And if we can sort of reach out and, you know, help other people and, you know, connect with other people, and it makes you feel like less alone with it as well, like you're not the only one going through it. And
of course,
so it was really sort of, it's really Romana's takes the lead on it. I kind of come in for the kind of male perspective, but she she's like a proper angel, like she's a warrior. She's just like taking it and run with it, and I'm so proud of her that she's going through what we're going through, and she's able to, you know, help people at the same time, with all the people we get on, all the guests, and it's a bit of a sort of labour of love, but we hope one day that we'll get, we're literally in the middle, right, tomorrow I go down to Manchester to, we're right in the middle of our IVF treatment at the moment, so Romana isn't around, so yeah, this is our fourth cycle, and and this is over a period of 4 years, our last one, I think, because you can't keep doing it, it's so expensive, you know. We had a couple of rounds with the NHS and a couple of private rounds, and we're hoping this will be, well, it will be the last one, and then we'll decide what we're going to do after that if it's not successful, but I'm hoping it will be. But it kind of wears you down after a while. But I mean,
it does.
I mean, the great thing is that it's kind of brought Romana and I closer, which is, because it can really put a strain on relationships. But thankfully, we're always making little plans, and we're trying to sort of live our lives as best we can, even going through this. But we like to have a laugh with it as well, because it can get really heavy. Do you know what I mean?
I bet, yeah.
So I guess on the podcast, I'm the sort of the prat, if you like.
No, sure not.
Oh yeah, it comes to me quite easy, so that's fine. But
well, it's good to go into your sort of stereotypical role.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's It's yeah, so it's called For Trying It Loud, The Infertility Years, and yeah, we're dead proud of it actually, and I'm proud of Romana, to be honest, because she is really, she's sort of led the way with it, and I'm kind of like, I do bits and bobs, but I don't know where she finds the time to do it all, but
amazing, and 40 episodes deep already, amazing.
I know. Do it this into this well into the second series, and that's only been, yeah, we do it every 2 weeks now, just give ourselves a little bit of breathing space. But
oh, I keep toying with that myself.
Yeah, I was thinking about you. I was thinking because it's pressure, like it's
a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot of pressure to put on yourself to, you know, to produce one of these every week because you've got all the editing and everything, you know, and just to get the content in there. And
but I'm obsessive, so it's like, it's putting my obsessiveness to good use because I can't let go now. I'm like, I've done it every week for, you know, 170 weeks, so
wow.
I hate to stop now.
I know.
I keep going, maybe after 200 or something. I did like, after 100, I'll take a break, and then I was like, nah, 150, and then it just goes on, so I've just not stopped yet.
I know, you just, there'd be no shortage of actors anyway, there's, and artists, there's loads out there.
And nobody's too busy to talk to me now.
Well, they shouldn't be.
No excuse.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Well, yes, we'll look out for that, For Trying Out Loud, on presumably everywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and just one more thing, just even if you know, even if you're not going through it yourself, but you have a family member, you have a friend that's going through it, it's sometimes good just to, you know, understand what they're going through, because that's the whole thing. A lot of people really don't, I didn't know what it was really, you know, and what does it mean, and what's the terminology and all that. So I think even for people that aren't going through it themselves, but maybe know someone that's going through it, there's lots of things in there for, to help with families, and there's a good variety of topics in there we cover. So give it a little listen.
Amazing. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And thanks for talking to me.
Oh, always a pleasure, Brian. Always a pleasure.
Never a chore. Maybe we'll work together someday. Maybe we'll work someday.
Yeah.
I look forward
That'd
to it.
That'd be nice, man. That'd be nice.
Right, take it easy.
Take care, man.
Wonderful stuff. Ewan Donald, what a class act he is. And remember to check out his and Romana's podcast, For Trying Out Loud, all the places you would normally get your podcasts. It's become very successful, and obviously is a project that's close to their hearts. So, you know, it's done with great, great passion. For Trying Out Loud is on all the usual channels. And look on Instagram and Twitter for Brido Hingwee for my funny videos. And remember to follow us, PitCCPod, on both of those channels. Feel free to drop us a line anytime. Share with me. Let people know you're listening to the show. Do anything you can to promote the show. It would be much appreciated. I'm off on my holidays now, so I'll be very quiet for the next week. But I'll see you at the same time next week when I'm back. So, cheerio now.